used to open my door and we step inside. I didn't even realize we'd taken an elevator to get up this many floors. I realize I must have made a horrible scene when I arrived, and I'm almost happy. I hope I disappoint Warner in every possible way. The dining room is big enough to feed thousands of orphans. Instead, there are 7 banquet tables draped across the room, blue silk spilling across the tabletops, crystal vases bursting with orchids and stargazer lilies, glass bowls filled with gardenias. It's enchanting. I wonder where they got the flowers from. They must not be real. I don't know how they could be real. I haven't seen real flowers in years. Warner is positioned at the table directly in the middle, seated at the head. As soon as he sees me, Adam, he stands up. The entire room stands in turn. I realize almost immediately that there is an empty seat on either side of him, and I don't intend to stop moving, but I do. I take quick inventory of the attendees and can't count any other women. Adam brushes the small of my back with 3 fingertips, and I'm startled out of my skin. I hurry forward, and Warner beams at me. He pulls out the chair on his left and gestures for me to sit down. I do. I try not to look at Adam as he sits across from me.
"You know, there are clothes in your armoire, my dear."
Warner sits down beside me. The room reseats itself and resumes a steady stream of chatter. He's turned almost entirely in my direction, but somehow the only presence I'm aware of is directly across from me. I focus on the empty plate 2 inches from my fingers. I drop my hands in my lap.
"And you don't have to wear those dirty tennis shoes anymore,"
Warner continues, stealing another glance before pouring something into my cup. It looks like water. I'm so thirsty I could inhale a waterfall. I hate his smile. Hate looks just like everybody else until it smiles. Until it spins around and lies with lips and teeth carved into the semblance of something too passive to punch.
"Juliet?"
I inhale too quickly. A stifled cough is ballooning in my throat. His glassy green eyes glint in my direction.
"Are you not hungry?"
Words dipped in sugar. His gloved hand touches my wrist and I nearly sprain it in my haste to distance myself from him. I could eat every person in this room. "No, thank you." He licks his bottom lip into a smile.
"Don't confuse stupidity for bravery, love. I know you haven't eaten anything in days."
Something in my patience snaps. "I'd really rather die than eat your food and listen to you call me love," I tell him. Adam drops his fork. Warner spares him a swift glance, and when he looks my way again, his eyes have hardened. He holds my gaze for a few infinitely long seconds before he pulls a gun out of his jacket pocket. He fires. The entire room screams to a stop. My heart is flapping wings against my throat. I turn my head very, very slowly to follow the direction of Warner's gun, only to see he's shot some kind of meat right through the bone. The platter of food is slightly steaming across the room, the meal heaped less than a foot away from the guests. He shot it without even looking. He could have killed someone. It takes all of my energy to remain very, very still. Warner drops the gun on my plate. The silence gives it space to clatter around the universe and back.
"Choose your words very wisely, Juliet. One word for me, and your life here won't be so easy."
I blink. Adam pushes a plate of food in front of me. The strength of his gaze is like a white-hot poker pressed against my skin. I look up, and he cocks his head the tiniest millimeter. His eyes are saying, please. I pick up my fork. Warner doesn't miss a thing. He clears his throat a little too loudly. He laughs with no humor as he cuts into the meat on his plate.
Do I have to get Ken to do all my work for me?
Excuse me?
It seems he's the only one you'll listen to.
His tone is breezy, but his jaw is unmistakably set. He turns to Adam.
I'm surprised you didn't tell her to change her clothes like I asked you to.
Adam sits up straighter.
I did, sir.
I like my clothes, I tell him. I'd like to punch you in the eye is what I don't tell him. Warner's smile slides back into place.
No one asked what you like, love. Now eat. I need you to look your best when you stand beside me.
Chapter 13. Warner insists on accompanying me to my room. After dinner, Adam disappeared with a few of the other soldiers. He disappeared without a word or glance in my direction, and I don't have any idea what to anticipate. At least I have nothing to lose but my life.
I don't want you to hate me, Warner says as we make our way toward the elevator. I'm only your enemy if you want me to be.
We will always be enemies. My voice is cracked into chips of ice. The words melt on my tongue. I will never be what you want me to be. Warner sighs as he presses the button for the elevator.
I really think you'll change your mind.
He glances at me with a small smile. A shame, really, that such striking looks should be wasted on such a miserable human being.
You and I, Juliet, together, we could be unstoppable.
I will not look at him, though I feel his gaze touching every inch of my body. No, thank you. We're in the elevator. The world is whooshing past us, and the walls of glass make us a spectacle to every person on every floor. There are no secrets in this building. He touches my elbow, and I pull away.
You might reconsider,
he says softly. How did you figure it out? The elevator dings open, but I'm not moving. I finally turn to face him because I can't contain my curiosity. I study his hands, so carefully sheathed in leather, his sleeves thick and crisp and long. Even his collar is high and regal. He's dressed impeccably from head to toe and covered everywhere except his face. Even if I wanted to touch him, I'm not sure I'd be able to. He's protecting himself. From me.
Perhaps a conversation for tomorrow night.
He cocks a brow and offers me his arm. I pretend not to notice it as we walk off the elevator and down the hall.
Maybe you could wear something nice.
What's your first name? I ask him. We're standing in front of my door. He stops, surprised, lifts his chin almost imperceptibly, focuses his eyes on my face until I begin to regret my question.
You want to know my name?
I don't do it on purpose, but my eyes narrow just a bit. Warner is your last name, isn't it? He almost smiles.
You want to know my name?
I didn't realize it was a secret. He steps forward. His lips twitch. His eyes fall. His lips draw in a tight breath. He drops a gloved finger down the apple of my cheek.
I'll tell you mine if you tell me yours,
he whispers, too close to my neck. I inch backward, swallow hard. You already know my name. He's not looking at my eyes.
You're right. I should rephrase that. What I meant to say was, I'll tell you mine if you show me yours.
What? I'm breathing too fast, too suddenly. He begins to pull off his gloves and I begin to panic.
Show me what you can do.
My jaw is too tight and my teeth have begun to ache. I won't touch you.
That's all right. He tugs off the other glove. I don't exactly need your help.
No.
Don't worry, he grins. I'm sure it won't hurt you at all.
No, I gasp. No, I won't. I can't.
Fine, Warner snaps. That's fine. You don't want to hurt me. I'm so utterly flattered.
He almost rolls his eyes, looks down the hall, spots a soldier, beckons him over.
Jenkins?
Jenkins is swift for his size, and he's at my side in a second.
Sir.
He bows his head an inch, even though he's clearly Warner Sr. He can't be more than 27, stocky, sturdy, packed with bulk. He spares me a sidelong glance. His brown eyes are warmer than I'd expect them to be.
I'm going to need you to accompany Miss Ferrars back downstairs. But be warned, she's incredibly uncooperative and will try to break free from your grip.
He smiles too slowly.
No matter what she says or does, soldier, you cannot let go of her. Are we clear?
Jenkins' eyes widen. He blinks. His nostrils flare. His fingers flex at his sides. He takes a short breath. Nods. Jenkins is not an idiot. I start running. I'm bolting down the hallway and running past a series of stunned soldiers too scared to stop me. I don't know what I'm doing, why I think I can run, where I think I could possibly go. I'm straining to reach the elevator, if only because I think it will buy me time. I don't know what else to do. Warner's commands are bouncing off the walls and exploding in my eardrums. He doesn't need to chase me. He's getting others to do the work for him. Soldiers are lining up before me, beside me, behind me. I can't breathe. I'm spinning in a circle of my own stupidity, panicked, pained, petrified by the thought of what I'm going to do to Jenkins against my will, what he will do to me against his will, what will happen to both of us despite our best intentions.
Seize her,
Warner says softly. Silence has stuffed itself into every corner of this building. His voice is the only sound in the room. Jenkins steps forward. My eyes are flooding and I squeeze them shut. I pry them open. I blink back at the crowd and spot a familiar face. Adam is staring at me, horrified. Shame has covered every inch of my body. Jenkins offers me his hand. My bones begin to buckle, snapping in synchronicity with the beats of my heart. I crumble to the floor, folding into myself like a flimsy crepe. My arms are so painfully bare in this ragged t-shirt. Don't! I hold up a tentative hand, pleading with my eyes, staring into the face of this innocent man. Please, don't! My voice breaks. You don't want to touch me!
I never said I did.
Jenkins' voice is deep and steady, full of regret. Jenkins, who has no gloves, no protection, no preparation, no possible defense.
That was a direct order, soldier.
Warner barks, trains a gun at his back. Jenkins grabs my arms. No, 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 I gasp. My blood is surging through my veins, rushing through my body like a raging river, waves of heat lapping against my bones. I can hear his anguish. I can feel the power pouring out of his body. I can hear his heart beating in my ear, and my head is spinning with the rush of adrenaline fortifying my being. I feel alive. I wish it hurt me. I wish it maimed me. I wish it repulsed me. I wish I hated the potent force wrapping itself around my skeleton. But I don't. My skin is pulsing with someone else's life, and I don't hate it. I hate myself for enjoying it. I enjoy the way it feels to be brimming with more life and hope and human power than I knew I was capable of. His pain gives me a pleasure I never asked for, and he's not letting go. But he's not letting go because he can't. Because I have to be the one to break the connection. Because the agony incapacitates him. Because he's caught in my snares. Because I am a Venus flytrap, and I am lethal. I fall on my back and kick at his chest, willing him away from me, willing his weight off my small frame, his limp body collapsed against my own. I'm suddenly screaming and struggling to see past the sheet of tears obscuring my vision. I'm hiccuping, hysterical, horrified by the frozen look on this man's face, his paralyzed lips wheezing gasps through his lungs. I break free and stumble backward. The sea of soldiers parts behind me. Every face is etched in astonishment and pure, unadulterated fear. Jenkins is lying on the floor, and no one dares approach him. Somebody help him! I scream. Somebody help him! He needs a doctor! He needs to be taken! He needs a... Oh, God, what have I done? Juliet, don't touch me! Don't you dare touch me! Warner's gloves are back in place, and he's trying to hold me together. He's trying to smooth back my hair. He's trying to wipe away my tears, and I want to murder him!
Juliet, you need to calm down.
Help him! I cry, falling to my knees, my eyes glued to the figure lying on the floor. The other soldiers are finally creeping closer, cautious as though he might be contagious. Please, you have to help him, please!
Kent, Curtis, Soledad, take care of this!
Warner shouts to his men before scooping me up into his arms. I'm still kicking when the world goes black. Chapter 14. The ceiling is fading in and out of focus. My head is heavy. My vision is blurry. My heart is strained. There is a distinct flavor of panic lodged somewhere underneath my tongue, and I'm fighting to remember where it came from. I try to sit up and can't understand why I was lying down. Someone's hands are on my shoulders.
How are you feeling?
Warner is peering down at me. Suddenly, my memories are burning in my eyes, and Jenkins' face is swimming in my consciousness, and I'm swinging my fists and screaming for Warner to get away from me, and struggling to wriggle out of his grip, but he just smiles, laughs a little, gentles my hand down beside my torso.
Well, at least you're awake, he sighs. You had me worried for a moment.
I try to control my trembling limbs. Get your hands away from me. He waves sheathed fingers in front of my face.
I'm all covered up. Don't worry.
I hate you.
So much passion.
He laughs again. He looks so calm, so genuinely amused. He stares at me with eyes softer than I ever expected them to be. I turn away. He stands up, takes a short breath.
Here,
he says, reaching for a tray on a small table.
I brought you food.
I take advantage of the moment to sit up and look around. I'm lying on a bed draped in damask golds and burgundies, the darkest shade of blood. The floor is covered in thick, rich carpet, the color of a setting summer sun. It's warm in this room. It's the same size as the one I occupy. Its furniture standard enough. Bed, armoire, side tables, chandelier glittering from the ceiling. The only difference is there's an extra door in this room, and there's a candle burning quietly on a small table in the corner. I haven't seen fire in so many years I've lost count. I have to stifle an impulse to reach out and touch the flame. I prop myself up against the pillows and try to pretend I'm not comfortable. Where am I? Warner turns around, holding a plate with bread and cheese on it. His other hand is gripping a glass of water. He looks around the room as if seeing it for the first time.
This is my bedroom.
If my head weren't splitting into pieces, I'd be tempted to run. Take me to my own room. I don't want to be here.
And yet, here you are.
He sits at the foot of the bed, a few feet away, pushes the plate in front of me.
Are you thirsty?
I don't know if it's because I can't think straight, or if it's because I'm genuinely confused, but I'm struggling to reconcile Warner's polarizing personalities. Here he is, offering me a glass of water after he forced me to torture someone. I lift my hands and study my fingers as if I've never seen them before. I don't understand. He cocks his head, inspecting me as though I might have seriously injured myself.
I only asked if you were thirsty. That shouldn't be difficult to understand.
A pause.
Drink this.
I take the glass, stare at it, stare at him, stare at the walls. I must be insane. Warner sighs.
I'm not sure, but I think you've fainted. And I think you should probably eat something, though I'm not entirely sure about that either.
He pauses.
You've probably had too much exertion your first day here. My mistake.
Why are you being nice to me? The surprise on his face surprises me even more.
Because I care about you,
he says simply.
You care about me?
The numbness in my body is beginning to dissipate. My blood pressure is rising and anger is making its way to the forefront of my consciousness.
I almost killed Jenkins because of you.
You didn't kill.
Your soldiers beat me. You keep me here like a prisoner. You threaten me. You threaten to kill me. You give me no freedom, and you say you care about me?
I nearly throw the glass of water at his face.
You are a monster!
Warner turns away, so I'm staring at his profile. He clasps his hands, changes his mind, touches his lips.
I am only trying to help you.
Liar!
He seems to consider that. Nods, just once.
Yes. Most of the time, yes.
I don't want to be here. I don't want to be your experiment. Let me go.
No.
He stands up.
I'm afraid I can't do that.
Why not?
Because I can't. I just...
He tugs at his fingers. Clears his throat. His eyes touch the ceiling for a brief moment.
Because I need you.
You need me to kill people!
He doesn't answer right away. He walks to the candle, pulls off a glove, tickles the flame with his bare fingers.
You know I am very capable of killing people on my own, Juliet. I'm actually very good at it.
That's disgusting.
He shrugs.
How else do you think someone my age is able to control so many soldiers? Why else would my father allow me to take charge of an entire sector?
Your father?
I sit up, suddenly curious in spite of myself. He ignores my question.
The mechanics of fear are simple enough. People are intimidated by me, so they listen when I speak.
He waves a hand.
Empty threats are worth very little these days.
I squeeze my eyes shut.
So you kill people for power?
As do you.
How dare you?
He laughs loud.
You're free to lie to yourself if it makes you feel better.
I am not lying.
Why did it take you so long to break your connection with Jenkins?
My mouth freezes in place.
Why didn't you fight back right away? Why did you allow him to touch you for as long as he did?
My hands have begun to shake and I grip them hard. You don't know anything about me.
And yet, you claim to know me so well.
I clench my jaw, not trusting myself to speak.
At least I'm honest, he adds.
You just agreed you're a liar!
He raises his eyebrows. At least I'm honest about being a liar.
I slam the glass of water on the side table, drop my head in my hands, try to stay calm, take a steadying breath. Well, I rasp, why do you need me then, if you're such an excellent murderer? A smile flickers and fades across his face.
One day I'll introduce you to the answer to that question.
I try to protest, but he stops me with one hand, picks up a piece of bread from the plate, holds it under my nose.
You hardly ate anything at dinner. That can't possibly be healthy.
I don't move. He drops the bread on the plate and drops the plate beside the water, turns to me, studies my eyes with such intensity I'm momentarily disarmed. There are so many things I want to say and scream, but somehow I've forgotten all about the words waiting patiently in my mouth. I can't make myself look away.
Eat something.
His eyes abandon me.
Then go to sleep. I'll be back for you in the morning.
Why can't I sleep in my own room? He gets to his feet, dusts off his pants for no real reason.
Because I want you to stay here.
But why? He barks out a laugh.
So many questions.
Well, if you'd give me a straight answer.
Good night, Juliet.
Are you going to let me go? I ask, this time quietly, this time timidly.
No.
He takes 6 steps into the corner with the candle.
And I won't promise to make things easier for you either.
There is no regret, no remorse, no sympathy in his voice. He could be talking about the weather. You could be lying.
Yes, I could be.
He nods as if to himself, blows out the candle, and disappears. I try to fight it. I try to stay awake. I try to find my head, but I can't. I collapse from sheer exhaustion. Chapter 15. Why don't you just kill yourself? Someone at school asked me once. I think it was the kind of question intended to be cruel, but it was the first time I'd ever contemplated the possibility. I didn't know what to say. Maybe I was crazy to consider it, but I'd always hoped that if I were a good enough girl, if I did everything right, if I said the right things or said nothing at all, I thought my parents would change their minds. I thought they would finally listen when I tried to talk. I thought they would give me a chance. I thought they might finally love me. I always had that stupid hope.
Good morning.
My eyes snap open with a start. I've never been a heavy sleeper. Warner is staring at me, sitting at the foot of his own bed in a fresh suit and perfectly polished boots. Everything about him is meticulous, pristine. His breath is cool and fresh in the crisp morning air. I can feel it on my face. It takes me a moment to realize I'm tangled in the same sheets Warner himself has slept in. My face is suddenly on fire, and I'm fumbling to free myself. I nearly fall off the bed. I don't acknowledge him.
Did you sleep well?
He asks. I look up. His eyes are such a strange shade of green, bright, crystal clear, piercing in the most alarming way. His hair is thick, the richest slice of gold. His frame is lean and unassuming, but his grip is effortlessly strong. I notice for the first time that he wears a jade ring on his left pinky finger. He catches me staring and stands up, slips his gloves on, and clasps his hands behind his back.
It's time for you to go back to your room.
I blink, nod, stand up and nearly fall down. I catch myself on the side of the bed and try to steady my dizzying head. I hear Warner sigh.
You didn't eat the food I left for you last night.
I grab the water with trembling hands and force myself to eat some of the bread. My body has gotten so used to hunger, I don't know how to recognize it anymore. Warner leads me out the door once I find my footing. I'm still clutching a piece of cheese in my hand. I nearly drop it when I step outside. There are even more soldiers here than there are on my floor. Each is equipped with at least 4 different kinds of guns, some slung around their necks, some strapped to their belts. All of them betray a look of terror when they see my face. It flashes in and out of their features so quickly I might have missed it, but it's obvious enough. Everyone grips their weapons a little tighter as I walk by. Warner seems pleased.
Their fear will work in your favor,
he whispers in my ear. My humanity is lying in a million pieces on this carpeted floor. I never wanted them to be afraid of me.
You should.
He stops. His eyes are calling me an idiot.
If they don't fear you, they will hunt you.
People hunt things they fear all the time.
At least now they know what they're up against.
He resumes walking down the hall, but my feet are stitched into the ground. Realization is ice-cold water, and it's dripping down my back.
You made me do that? What I did to Jenkins? On purpose?
Warner is already 3 steps ahead, but I can see the smile on his face.
Everything I do is done on purpose.
You wanted to make a spectacle of me. My heart is racing in my wrist, pulsing in my fingers.
I was trying to protect you.
From your own soldiers. I'm running to catch up to him now, burning with indignation. At the expense of a man's life,
get inside.
Warner has reached the elevator. He's holding the doors open for me. I follow him in. He presses the right buttons. The doors close. I turn to speak. He corners me. I'm backed into the far edge of this glass receptacle, and I'm suddenly nervous. His hands are holding my arms, and his lips are dangerously close to my face. His gaze is locked into mine, his eyes flashing, dangerous. He says one word.
Yes.
It takes me a moment to find my voice.
Yes, what?
Yes, from my own soldiers. Yes, at the expense of one man's life.
He tenses his jaw, speaks through his teeth.
There is very little you understand about my world, Juliet.
I'm trying to understand.
No, you're not.
He snaps. His eyelashes are like individual threads of spun gold lit on fire. I almost want to touch them.
You don't understand that power and control can slip from your grasp at any moment, and even when you think you're most prepared. These 2 things are not easy to earn. They are even harder to retain.
I try to speak, and he cuts me off.
You think I don't know how many of my own soldiers hate me? You think I don't know that they'd like to see me fall? You think there aren't others who would love to have the position I worked so hard to have?
Don't flatter yourself.
He closes the last few inches between us, and my words fall to the floor. I can't breathe. The tension in his entire body is so intense it's nearly palpable, and I think my muscles have begun to freeze.
You are naive,
he says to me, his voice harsh, low. A grating whisper against my skin.
You don't realize that you're a threat to everyone in this building. They have every reason to harm you. You don't see that I am trying to help you.
By hurting me? I explode. By hurting others! His laugh is cold, mirthless. He backs away from me, suddenly disgusted. The elevator slides open, but he doesn't step outside. I can see my door from here.
Go back to your room, wash up, change. There are dresses in your armoire.
I don't like dresses.
I don't think you like seeing that either,
he says, with a tilt of his head. I follow his gaze to see a hulking shadow across from my door. I turn to him for an explanation, but he says nothing. He's suddenly composed, his features wiped clean of emotion. He takes my hand, squeezes my fingers, says,
I'll be back for you in exactly 1 hour,
and closes the elevator doors before I have a chance to protest. I begin to wonder if it's coincidence that the one person most unafraid to touch me is a monster himself. I step forward and dare to peer closer at the soldier standing in the dark. Adam. Oh, Adam. Adam, who knows exactly what I'm capable of. My heart is a water balloon exploding in my chest. My lungs are swinging from my ribcage. I feel as though every fist in the world has decided to punch me in the stomach. I shouldn't care so much, but I do. He'll hate me forever now. He won't even look at me. I wait for him to open my door, but he doesn't move. Adam, I venture, tentative. I need your key card. I watch him swallow hard and take a tiny breath, and immediately I sense something is wrong. I move closer and a quick, stiff shake of his head tells me not to. I do not touch people. I do not get close to people. I am a monster. He doesn't want me near him. Of course he doesn't. I should never forget my place. He opens my door with immense difficulty, and I realize someone's hurt him, or I can't see it. Warner's words come back to me, and I recognize his airy goodbye as a warning. A warning that severs every nerve ending in my body. Adam will be punished for my mistakes, for my disobedience. I want to bury my tears in a bucket of regret. I step through the door and glance back at Adam one last time, unable to feel any kind of triumph in his pain. Despite everything he's done, I don't know if I'm capable of hating him. Not Adam. Not the boy I used to know.
The purple dress,
he says, his voice broken and a little breathy like it hurts to inhale. I have to wring my hands to keep from running to him.
Wear the purple dress, he coughs, Juliet.
I will be the perfect mannequin. Chapter 16. As soon as I'm in the room, I open the armoire and yank the purple dress off the hanger before I remember I'm being watched. The cameras. I wonder if Adam was punished for telling me about the cameras, too. I wonder if he's taken any other risks with me. I wonder why he would. I touch the stiff, modern material of the plum dress, and my fingers find their way to the hem, just as Adam's did yesterday. I can't help but wonder why he likes this dress so much, why it has to be this one, why I even have to wear a dress. I am not a doll. My hand comes to rest on the small wooden shelf beneath the hanging clothes, and an unfamiliar texture brushes my skin. It's rough and foreign but familiar at the same time. I step closer to the armoire and hide between the doors. My fingers feel their way around the surface, and a surge of sunshine rushes through my stomach until I'm certain I'm bursting with hope and feeling and a force of stupid happiness, so strong I'm surprised there aren't tears streaming down my face. My notebook. He saved my notebook. Adam saved the only thing I own.
I grab the purple dress and tuck the paper pad into its folds before stealing away to the bathroom. The bathroom where there are no cameras. The bathroom where there are no cameras. The bathroom where there are no cameras. He was trying to tell me. I realize. Before, in the bathroom, he was trying to tell me something, and I was so scared, I scared him away. I scared him away. I close the door behind me, and my hands are shaking as I unfurl the familiar papers bound together by old glue. I flip through the pages to make sure they're all there, and my eyes land on my most recent entry. At the very bottom, there is a shift. A new sentence, not written in my handwriting. A new sentence that must have come from him. It's not what you think. I stand perfectly still. Every inch of my skin is taut with tension, fraught with feeling, and the pressure is building in my chest, pounding louder and faster and harder, overcompensating for my stillness. I do not tremble when I'm frozen in time. I train my breath to come slower. I count things that do not exist. I make up numbers I do not have. I pretend time is a broken hourglass bleeding seconds through sand. I dare to believe. I dare to hope Adam is trying to reach out to me. I'm crazy enough to consider the possibility. I rip the page out of the small notebook and clutch it close, actively swallowing the hysteria tickling every broken moment in my mind. I hide the notebook in a pocket of the purple dress, the pocket Adam must have slipped it into, the pocket it must have fallen out of, the pocket of the purple dress, the pocket of the purple dress. Hope is a pocket of possibility. I'm holding it in my hand. Warner is not late. He doesn't knock either. I'm slipping on my shoes when he walks in without a single word, without even an effort to make his presence known. His eyes are falling all over my frame. My jaw tightens on its own. You hurt him, I find myself saying.
You shouldn't care,
he says with a tilt of his head, gesturing to my dress.
But it's obvious you do.
I zip my lips and pray my hands aren't shaking too much. I don't know where Adam is. I don't know how badly he's hurt. I don't know what Warner will do, how far he'll go in the pursuit of what he wants, but the prospect of Adam in pain is like a cold hand clutching my esophagus. I can't catch my breath. I feel like I'm struggling to swallow a toothpick. If Adam is trying to help me, it could cost him his life. I touch the piece of paper tucked into my pocket. Breathe. Warner's eyes are on my window. Breathe.
It's time to go, he says.
Breathe. Where are we going? He doesn't answer. We step out the door. I look around. The hallway is abandoned, empty. Where is Adam? Everyone.
I really like that dress, Warner says, as he slips an arm around my waist.
I jerk away, but he pulls me along, guiding me toward the elevator.
The fit is spectacular. It helps distract me from all your questions.
Your poor mother. Warner almost trips over his own feet. His eyes are wide, alarmed. He stops a few feet short of our goal, spins around.
What do you mean?
My stomach falls over. The look on his face, the unguarded strain, the flinching terror, the sudden apprehension in his features. I was trying to make a joke, is what I don't say to him. I feel sorry for your poor mother, is what I was going to say to him, that she has to deal with such a miserable, pathetic son. But I don't say any of it. He grabs my hands, focuses my eyes. Urgency is pulsing at his temples.
What do you mean?
He insists.
Nothing, I stammer. My voice breaks in half. It was just a joke. Warner drops my hands like they've burned him. He looks away, charges toward the elevator and doesn't wait for me to catch up. I wonder what he's not telling me. Only once we've gone down several floors and are making our way down an unfamiliar hall toward an unfamiliar exit does he finally look at me. He offers me four words.
Welcome to your future.
Chapter 17. I am swimming in sunlight. Warner is holding open a door that leads directly outside, and I'm so unprepared for the experience, I can hardly see straight. He grips my elbow to steady my path, and I glance back at him. We're going outside. I say it because I have to say it out loud. Because the outside world is a treat I'm so seldom offered. Because I don't know if Warner is trying to be nice again. I look from him to what looks like a concrete courtyard and back to him again. What are we doing outside?
We have some business to take care of.
He tugs me toward the center of this new universe, and I'm breaking away from him, reaching out to touch the sky like I'm hoping it will remember me. The clouds are gray like they've always been, but they're sparse and unassuming. The sun is high, 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 lounging against a backdrop, propping up its rays and redirecting its warmth in our general direction. I stand on tiptoe and try to touch it. The wind folds itself into my arms and smiles against my skin. Cool, silky, smooth air braids a soft breeze through my hair. This square courtyard could be my ballroom. I want to dance with the elements. Warner grabs my hand. I turn around. He's smiling.
This,
he says, gesturing to the cold gray world under our feet.
This makes you happy?
I look around. I realize the courtyard is not quite a roof, but somewhere between two buildings. I edge toward the ledge and can see dead land and naked trees and scattered compounds stretching on for miles. Cold air smells so clean, I tell him. Fresh, brand new. It's the most wonderful smell in the world. His eyes look amused, troubled, interested, and confused all at once. He shakes his head, pats down his jacket, and reaches for an inside pocket. He pulls out a gun with a gold hilt that glints in the sunlight. I pull in a sharp breath. He inspects the gun in a way I wouldn't understand, presumably to check whether or not it's ready to fire. He slips it into his hand, his finger poised directly over the trigger. He turns and finally reads the expression on my face. He almost laughs.
Don't worry. It's not for you.
Why do you have a gun? I swallow hard, gripping my arms tight across my chest. What are we doing up here? Warner slips the gun back into his pocket and walks to the opposite end of the ledge. He motions for me to follow him. I creep closer, follow his eyes, peer over the barrier. Every soldier in the building is standing not 15 feet below. I distinguish almost 50 lines, each perfectly straight, perfectly spaced, so many soldiers standing single file I lose count. I wonder if Adam is in the crowd. I wonder if he can see me. I wonder what he thinks of me now. The soldiers are standing in a square space, almost identical to the one Warner and I occupy, but they're one organized mass of black. Black pants, black shirts, shin-high black boots, not a single gun in sight. Each is standing with his left fist pressed to his heart, frozen in place. Black and gray, and black and gray, and black and gray, and bleak. Suddenly, I'm acutely aware of my impractical outfit. Suddenly, the wind is too callous, too cold, too painful as it slices its way through the crowd. I shiver, and it has nothing to do with the temperature. I look for Warner, but he has already taken his place at the edge of the courtyard. It's obvious he's done this many times before. He pulls a small square of perforated metal out of his pocket and presses it to his lips. When he speaks, his voice carries over the crowd like it's been amplified.
Sector 45.
One word, one number. The entire group shifts. Left fists released, drop to their sides. Right fist planted in place on their chests. They're an oiled machine, working in perfect collaboration with one another. If I weren't so apprehensive, I think I'd be impressed.
We have two matters to deal with this morning.
Warner's voice penetrates the atmosphere. Crisp, clear, unbearably confident.
The first is standing by my side.
Thousands of eyes snap up in my direction. I feel myself flinch.
Juliet, come here, please.
Two fingers bend in two places to beckon me forward. I inch into view. Warner slips his arm around me. I cringe. The crowd starts. My heart careens out of control. I'm too scared to back away from him. His gun is too close to my body. The soldiers seem stunned that Warner is willing to touch me.
Jenkins, would you step forward, please?
My fingers are running a marathon down my thigh. I can't stand still. I can't calm the palpitations crashing my nervous system. Jenkins steps out of line. I spot him immediately. He's okay. Dear God, he's okay.
Jenkins had the pleasure of meeting Juliet just last night,
he continues. The tension among the men is very nearly tangible. No one, it seems, knows where this speech is headed, and no one, it seems, hasn't already heard Jenkins' story. My story.
I hope you'll all greet her with the same sort of kindness,
Warner adds, his lips laughing without a sound.
She will be with us for some time and will be a very valuable asset to our efforts. The reestablishment welcomes her. I welcome her. You should welcome her.
The soldiers drop their fists all at once, all at exactly the same time. They shift as one, 5 steps backward, 5 steps forward, 5 steps standing in place. They raise their left arms high and curl their fingers into a fist and fall on one knee. I run to the edge, desperate to get a closer look at such a strangely choreographed routine. I've never seen anything like it. Warner makes them stay like that, bent like that, fists raised in the air like that. He doesn't speak for at least 30 seconds. And then he does.
Good.
The soldiers rise and rest their right fists on their chests again.
The second matter at hand is even more pleasant than the first,
Warner continues, though he seems to take no pleasure in saying it. His eyes are sharpening over the soldiers below, shards of emerald flickering like green flames over their bodies.
Delalu has a report for us.
He spends an eternity simply staring at the soldiers, letting his few words marinate in their minds, letting their own imaginations drive them insane, letting the guilty among them tremble in anguish. Warner says nothing for so long. No one moves for so long. I begin to fear for my life, despite his earlier reassurances. I begin to wonder if perhaps I am the guilty one, if perhaps the gun in his pocket is destined for me. I finally dare to turn in his direction. He glances at me for the first time, and I have no idea how to read him. His face is 10,000 possibilities staring straight through me.
Delalu,
he says, still looking at me.
You may step forward.
A thin, balding sort of man in a slightly more decorated outfit steps out from the very front of the fifth line. He doesn't look entirely stable. He ducks his head an inch. His voice warbles when he speaks.
Sir.
Warner finally unshackles my eyes and nods almost imperceptibly in the balding man's direction. De La Lue recites,
We have a charge against Private 45B-76423, Fletcher, Seamus.
The soldiers are all frozen in line, frozen in relief, frozen in fear, frozen in anxiety. Nothing moves, nothing breathes. Even the wind is afraid to make a sound.
Fletcher?
One word from Warner, and several hundred necks snap in the same direction. Fletcher steps out of line. He looks like a gingerbread man. Ginger hair, ginger freckles. Lips almost artificially red. His face is blank of every possible emotion. I've never been more afraid for a stranger in my life. De La Lue speaks again.
Private Fletcher was found on unregulated grounds, fraternizing with civilians believed to be rebel party members. He has stolen food and supplies from storage units dedicated to Sector 45 citizens. It is not known whether he betrayed sensitive information.
Warner levels his gaze at the gingerbread man.
Do you deny these accusations, soldier?
Fletcher's nostrils flare. His jaw tenses. His voice cracks when he speaks.
No, sir.
Warner nods, takes a short breath, licks his lips, and shoots him in the forehead. Chapter 18. No one moves. Fletcher's face is etched in permanent horror as he crumbles to the ground. I'm so struck by the impossibility of it all that I can't decide whether or not I'm dreaming. I can't determine whether or not I'm dying. I can't figure out whether or not fainting is a good idea. Fletcher's limbs are bent at odd angles on the cold concrete floor. Blood is pooling around him, and still no one moves. No one says a single word. No one betrays a single look of fear. I keep touching my lips to see if my screams have escaped. Warner tucks his gun back into his jacket pocket.
Sector 45, you are dismissed.
Every soldier falls on one knee. Warner slips the metal amplification device back into his suit and has to yank me free from the spot where I'm glued to the ground. I'm tripping over myself, my limbs weak and aching through the bone. I feel nauseous, delirious, incapable of holding myself upright. I keep trying to speak, but the words are sticking to my tongue. I'm suddenly sweating and suddenly freezing and suddenly so sick I see spots clouding my vision. Warner is trying to get me through the door.
You really must eat more, he says to me.
I am gaping with my eyes, gaping with my mouth, gaping wide open because I feel holes everywhere, punched into the terrain of my body. My heart must be bleeding out of my chest. I look down and can't understand why there's no blood on my dress, why this pain in my heart feels so real. You killed him, I manage to whisper. You just killed him.
You're very astute.
Why did you kill him? Why would you kill him? How could you do something like that?
Keep your eyes open, Juliet. Now's not the time to fall asleep.
I grab his shirt. I stop him before he gets inside. A gust of wind slaps me across the face, and I'm suddenly in control of my senses. I push him hard, slamming his back up against the door. You disgust me. I stare hard into his crystal, cold eyes. You disgust me. He twists me around, pinning me against the door where I just held him. He cups my face in his gloved hands, holding my eyes in place. The same hands he just used to kill a man. I'm trapped, transfixed, slightly terrified. His thumb brushes my cheek.
Life is a bleak place,
he whispers.
Sometimes you have to learn how to shoot first.
Warner follows me into my room.
You should probably sleep, he says to me.
It's the first time he's spoken since we left the room.